on. Did you have, like, plans before you went? I mean, Jeremy thought you might have, and I wondered, why even go through the charade, you know? No, I was totally planning on the movie. I didn't expect that I would get lost and stuff. Michaela sniffed once like she didn't believe me, and then looked up at the clock. Ms. Mason was working on something at her desk and didn't seem in a hurry to start class. That was really cool that you went out with Jeremy on Monday, I said, changing the subject. He said it was great. Or I was sure he would have if I'd asked about it. She looked at her nails again, but her ears started to turn a little pink.
He did?
She asked in a completely different tone. Yeah. I dropped my voice to a whisper. Remember, I didn't tell you anything. Like, I totally didn't tell you that he thinks you're the coolest girl he's ever known. Her ears were even pinker now. Man code. Right. I said nothing. She finally smiled, a real smile. Ms. Mason got up then and asked us to open our books. I thought maybe I was off the hook with Michaela, but when class was over, I saw her and Erica exchange a look, and then Michaela was picking at her nails again while we walked outside. So, she said. Yeah? I was just curious if, you know, we were going to see you at the dance after all? Like, you could totally hang with our group if you wanted to. The dance? I looked at her blankly. No, I'm still going to Seattle. She seemed surprised, but then she relaxed. Okay. Oh well. Maybe we can get a group thing together for prom. Share a limo. I stopped walking. I wasn't really planning on prom. Really? Shocking, Michaela laughed. You might want to mention it to Taylor, though. She says you're taking her. I felt my jaw fall open. Michaela cracked up. That's what I thought, she said. Are you serious? I demanded when I had control of my face again. I mean, she was probably joking. Logan and Jeremy were talking about getting started early and putting together a big thing for prom, and then Taylor said she was out because she already had plans with you. That's why Logan's being so, you know, about you. He has a thing for Taylor. I figure you deserved a heads up. After all, you broke the man code for me. What am I supposed to do? Tell her you're not taking her. I can't just... What would I even say? She smiled like she was enjoying this. Man up, Beau. Or rent a tux. Your choice. So I didn't get much out of government after that. Was it really my responsibility to uninvite Taylor to the prom? I tried to remember what I'd said to her in the parking lot when she'd asked me to the girl's choice. I was almost positive I had not agreed to anything. The sky was like lead as I walked to Trig, dark gray and kind of heavy-looking. Last week, I would have found it depressing. Today, I smiled. There was something better than sunshine. When I saw Jeremy sitting by an empty desk in the back row, watching the door, waiting for me, I remembered that Taylor wasn't the only problem I had right now. My neck started feeling warm, and I wished I'd kept the scarf. There was another open chair 2 rows forward, but it was probably better to get this over with and be done with it. Ms. Varner wasn't in the room yet. What was with all the tardy teachers today? It was like nobody even cared if we were educated. I sat next to Jeremy. He didn't keep me waiting.
Dang, son, he said. Who knew you had that kind of game?
I rolled my eyes. I have no game.
Please.
He punched my arm.
Edith Cullen? Come on, How did you swing that?
I didn't do anything.
How long has this been happening? Is it some kind of secret? Like she doesn't want her family to know? Is that why you pretended you were going to the movie with us?
I wasn't pretending anything. I had no idea she was in Port Angeles last night. She was the last person I expected to see. He seemed deflated by my obvious honesty.
Have you ever been out with her before last night?
Never.
Huh. Just a total coincidence?
I guess. It was obvious when I was telling the truth, and obvious when I was evading it. The suspicious, knowing look came back to his face.
Because, you know, it's not a secret that you've been, like, obsessed with her since you got here.
I winced. It's not?
So, I have to wonder how you turn that around. Do you have a genie in a lamp? Did you find some blackmail on her? Or did you trade your soul to the devil or something?
Whatever, man.
Exactly how much did you get in the bargain? Bet it was a pretty wild night, eh?
I was starting to get pissed, but I knew he would twist whatever reaction I showed to make it seem like something else. I answered calmly. It was an early night. Home by 8.
Are you serious?
It was just dinner and a ride home, Jeremy.
What about this morning, though? You were still with her.
Still?
No.
What, you thought she was with me all night?
She wasn't?
No.
But you were in her car.
She picked me up for school this morning.
Why?
I have no idea. She offered me a ride. I wasn't going to say no.
And that's it?
I shrugged.
Really? Please tell me you at least made out with her. Anything.
I scowled at him. It's not like that. He made a disgusted face.
That is, hands down, the most disappointing story I've ever heard in my entire life. I take back everything I said about your game. Obviously, it's just some pity thing.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe I should try to look more pathetic, if that's what Edith is into.
Go for it.
It won't take her long to get bored with you, I bet.
My facade slipped for a second. He caught the change and grinned, a little smug.
Yeah, I said. I'm sure you're right.
Miss Varner showed up then, and the general chatter started to die down while she began writing equations across the board.
You know what, though?
Jeremy said under his breath.
I think I'd rather be with a normal girl.
I was already irritated. I didn't like the way he talked about Edith in general, and the way he said normal really bugged me. No, Edith wasn't normal, but that wasn't because, like his tone seemed to imply, she was something off or wrong. She was beyond normal, above it, surpassing it by so much that normal and Edith weren't even on the same plane of existence.
That's probably for the best, I muttered in a hard voice.
Keep your expectations low. He shot me a startled look, but I turned to face the teacher. I could feel him staring at me suspiciously again, until Miss Varner noticed and called on him for an answer. He started flipping spastically through his book, trying to figure out what she'd asked him. Jeremy walked ahead of me on the way to Spanish, but I didn't care. I was still annoyed. He didn't talk to me again until the end of class when I started shoving my books, a little too enthusiastically, into my backpack.
You're not sitting with us at lunch today, are you?
His face was suspicious again, and more guarded now. Obviously, he'd thought I'd be eager to show off, to sell Edith out, to make myself look cooler. After all, Jeremy and I had been friends for a little while. Guys told each other this kind of stuff. It was probably part of the man code thing I'd invented. He'd assumed my loyalty would be with him, but now he knew he was wrong.
Not sure.
I said. No point in being overconfident. I remembered too clearly what it felt like whenever she disappeared. I didn't want to jinx myself. He walked off without waiting for me, but then he did a little stutter step and paused on the threshold of the classroom.
Seriously, what the hell?
Jeremy said loud enough that I could hear him, as did everyone else within a 10-foot radius. He glanced back at me, shook his head, then stalked away. I was in a hurry to get out the door, to see what that was about, but so was everyone else. One by one, they all stopped to look back at me before exiting. By the time I got out, I didn't know what to expect. Irrationally, I was half expecting to see Taylor in a sparkly prom dress and tiara. But outside the door to my Spanish class, leaning against the wall, looking 1,000 times more beautiful than anyone had a right to, Edith was waiting for me. Her wide gold eyes looked amused, and the corners of her lips were right on the point of smiling. Her hair was still coiled up in that messy twist, and I had the oddest urge to reach down and pull the pins out of it.
Hello, Beau.
Hi. Part of me was aware we had an audience, but I was past caring.
Hungry?
She asked.
Sure.
Actually, I had no idea if I was. My whole body felt like it was being electrocuted in a strange and very pleasant way. My nerves couldn't process more than that. She turned toward the cafeteria, swinging her bag into place.
Hey, let me get that for you, I offered.
She looked up at me with doe eyes.
Does it look too heavy for me?
Well, I mean...
Sure, she said.
She slid the bag down her arm and then held it out to me, very deliberately using just the tip of her pinky finger.
Thanks, I said,
and she let the strap fall into my hand. I guess I should have known it would be twice as heavy as my own. I caught it before it could hit the sidewalk, then hefted it over my free shoulder.
Do you always bring your own cinder blocks to school?
She laughed.
Archie asked me to grab a few things for him this morning.
Is Archie your favorite brother?
She looked at me.
It's not nice to have favorites.
Only child, I said. I'm everyone's favorite.
It shows. Anyway, why do you think that?
Seems like you talk about him most easily.
She thought about that for a moment, but didn't comment. Once we were in the cafeteria, I followed her to the food line. I couldn't help staring at the back corner of the cafeteria the way I did every day. Her family was all present and accounted for, paying attention only to each other. They either didn't notice Edith with me, or they didn't care. I thought about the idea Jeremy had come up with, that Edith and I were seeing each other in secret to keep it from her family's notice. It didn't look like she was hiding anything from them, but I couldn't help but wonder what they thought about me. I wondered what I thought about them. Just then, Archie looked up and smiled across the room at me. Automatically, I smiled back, then glanced down to see if he'd actually meant the smile for Edith. She was aware of him, but she wasn't responding in kind. She looked sort of angry. My eyes cut back and forth between the two of them, as they had some kind of silent conversation. First, Archie smiled wider, showing off teeth so white they were bright even across the length of the room. Edith raised her eyebrows in a sort of challenge, her upper lip curling back just a tiny bit. He rolled his eyes to the ceiling and held his hands up like he was saying, "I surrender." Edith turned her back to him and moved forward in the line. She grabbed a tray and started loading it up.
"I'm pretty close with all my family, but Archie and I do have the most in common," she said,
finally answering my question in a low voice. I had to duck my head down to hear her.
"Some days he's really annoying, though."
I glanced back at him. He was laughing now. Though he wasn't looking at us, I thought he might be laughing at her. I was paying so much attention to this little exchange that I didn't notice what she had on the tray till the lunch lady was ringing us up. That'll be 24-23, she said.
What?
I looked down at the tray and then did a double take. Edith was already paying, and then gliding off toward the table where we'd sat together last week.
Hey, I hissed, jogging a few steps to catch up with her. I can't eat all that.
Half is for me, of course. She sat down and pushed the overflowing tray to the center of the table. I raised my eyebrows.
Really?
Take whatever you want. I sank into the seat across from her, letting the dead weight of her bag slide to the floor with mine. At the other end of the long table, a group of seniors watched her with wide eyes.
I'm curious. What would you do if someone dared you to eat food?
You're always curious. She made a face, then daintily tore the tip off a piece of pizza, popped it in her mouth, and started chewing with a martyred expression. After a second, she swallowed, then gave me a superior look.
If someone dared you to eat dirt, you could, couldn't you? She asked.
I grinned at her. I did once, on a dare. It wasn't so bad.
Somehow I'm not surprised.
Here. She shoved the rest of the pizza to me. I took a bite. I wondered if it really tasted like dirt to her. It wasn't the best pizza I'd ever had, but it was decent. While I was chewing, she glanced over my shoulder and laughed. I swallowed quickly.
What? You've got Jeremy so confused.
Tough. He really let his mind run wild when he saw you get out of my car. I shrugged and took another bite. She tilted her head to the side.
Do you truly agree with him?
I had to swallow fast again, and I almost choked. She half rose, but I held my hand up and recovered.
I'm fine. Agree with him about what?
Why I'm here with you. It took me a minute to think through the conversation. I remembered things I hoped she hadn't been paying attention to, like the fact that apparently everyone knew I'd been obsessed with her from day one.
I'm not sure what you mean.
She frowned.
Obviously, it's just some pity thing, she quoted.
I was surprised that she looked irritated.
It's as good an explanation as any.
And I'll be getting bored soon, will I? That one stung a little. This was my biggest fear, and it seemed all too likely. But I tried to hide it with another shrug.
Beau, you're being ridiculous again.
Am I? She smiled a funny half-smile, half-frown.
There are several things I am currently worried about. Boredom is not one of them.
She cocked her head to the side, her eyes drilling into mine.
Don't you believe me?
Sure, I guess. If you say so. Her eyes narrowed.
Well, that was an overwhelming affirmative.
I took another bite of pizza, chewing slowly and deliberately this time. She waited, watching me with the intense little scowl that I knew meant she was trying to get inside my head. When I took a second bite without speaking, she blew an angry breath out her nose.
I truly loathe it when you do that.
It took a second to swallow.
What? Not tell you every single stupid thought that passes through my head?
I could tell she wanted to smile, but she didn't give in.
Precisely.
I don't know what to say. Do I think you'll get bored with me? Yeah, I do. I honestly don't know why you're still here. But I was trying not to say that out loud, because I didn't want to point something out that you might not have thought of yet.
The smile escaped.
So very true. I never would have realized it myself, but now that you mention it, I really ought to be moving along. That Jeremy suddenly seems alluringly pathetic. And then she cut off and the smile vanished.
Beau, you know that I'm joking.
I wondered what my face was doing. I nodded. Her forehead creased. After a second, she hesitantly stretched her arm across the table toward me, leaving her hand in easy reach. I covered it with mine. She smiled, but then she winced. Sorry, I said, pulling away. No, she objected. It's not you. Here. As carefully as if my hand were blown from the thinnest glass, she rested her fingers on my palm. Copying her caution, I folded my hand gently around them. What was wrong just now? I half whispered. Many different reactions. Her forehead wrinkled again. Royal has a particularly strident mental voice. I couldn't help it. I automatically glanced across the room and then was very sorry I had. Royal was glaring daggers at Edith's unprotected back, and Eleanor, across from him, was turned around to glower at Edith too. When I looked, Royal shifted his furious eyes to me. My eyes darted to Edith, the hair standing up on the back of my arms, but she was glaring back at Royal now, her upper lip pulled back off her teeth in a menacing scowl. To my surprise, Eleanor turned around at once, and Royal dropped his threatening stare. He looked down at the table with a suddenly sulky expression. Archie looked like he was enjoying it all hugely. Jessamine never turned. Did I just piss off? I swallowed before I could finish. A bunch of vampires? No, she said fiercely, then sighed. But I did. I glanced at Royal again for a fraction of a second. He hadn't moved. Look, are you in trouble because of me? What can I do? The memory of his livid eyes trained on her small body had a wave of panic rolling through me. She shook her head and smiled. You don't need to worry about me, she reassured me, a little smug. I'm not saying that Royal couldn't take me in a fair fight, but I am saying that I never have fought fair, and I don't intend to start now. He knows better than to try anything with me. Edith? She laughed. A joke. It's really nothing, Beau. Normal sibling issues. An only child couldn't understand. If you say so. I do. I looked at our hands, still folded so very carefully together. It was the first time I'd really held her hand. But wrapped up in the wonder of that was the memory of why she'd offered it to me in the first place. Back to what you were thinking, she said, as if she could read my thoughts. I sighed. Would it help if you knew you weren't the only one who had been accused of obsession? I groaned. You heard that too? Great. She laughed. I was entranced from start to finish. Sorry, I said. Why are you apologizing? It makes me feel better to know I'm not the only one. I stared at her, skeptical. Let me put it this way. She pursed her lips thoughtfully. Though you are the one person I can't be sure about, I'd still be willing to place a very large wager that I spend more time thinking about you than you do about me. Ha! I laughed, startled. You would totally lose that bet. She raised an eyebrow and then spoke so low that I had to lean in to hear. Ah, but you're only conscious for roughly 16 hours in any given 24-hour period. That gives me quite a lead, don't you think? You're not factoring in dreams, though. She sighed. Do nightmares count as dreams? Red started creeping up my neck. When I dream about you, it's definitely not a nightmare. Her mouth opened just a tiny bit in surprise, and her face was suddenly vulnerable. Really? She asked. It was obvious that she was pleased, so I said, every single night. She closed her eyes for just a minute, but when she opened them, her smile was teasing again. REM cycles are the shortest of all the sleep stages. I'm still hours ahead. I frowned. It was difficult to process.
You really think about me?
Why is that hard for you to believe?
Well, look at me, I said unnecessarily, as she already was. I'm absolutely ordinary. Well, except for bad things like all the near-death experiences and being so uncoordinated that I can barely walk.
And look at you.
I waved my free hand toward her and all her unsettling perfection. She smiled a slow smile. It started small but ended with the full array of dimples, like the grand finale at the end of a fireworks show on the 4th of July.
I can't argue with you about the bad things.
Well, there you go.
But you're the least ordinary person I've ever met.
Our eyes held for a long moment. Mine searched hers, as I tried to believe she could see something important enough to keep her here. It always felt like she was just about to slip away, to disappear like she was only a myth after all. But why? I didn't know how to phrase it. She tilted her head, waiting. Last night, I stopped and shook my head. She frowned.
Do you do that on purpose? The unfinished thought as a way to drive me mad?
I don't know if I can explain it right.
Please try.
I took a deep breath. Okay. You're claiming I don't bore you and you aren't thinking of moving on to Jeremy anytime soon. She nodded, fighting a grin. But last night, it was like... She was anxious now. The rest came out in a rush. Like you were already looking for a way to say goodbye.
Perceptive, she whispered.
And there was the anguish again, surfacing as she confirmed my worst fear. Her fingers ever so gently squeezed mine. Those two things are unrelated, however.
Which two things?
The depth of my feelings for you and the necessity of leaving. Well, they are related, but inversely.
The necessity of leaving.
My stomach plunged. I don't understand. She stared into my eyes again, and hers burned, mesmerizing. Her voice was barely audible.
The more I care about you, the more crucial it is that I find a way to keep you safe from me. Leaving would be the right thing to do.
I shook my head. No. She took a deep breath, and her eyes seemed to darken in an odd way.
Well, I wasn't very good at leaving you alone when I tried. I don't know how to do it.
Will you do me a favor?
Stop trying to figure that one out.
She half smiled. I suppose, given the frequency of your near-death experiences, it's actually safer for me to stay close. True story. You never know when another rogue van might attack. She frowned. You're still going to Seattle with me, right? Lots of vans in Seattle, waiting in ambush around literally every corner.
Actually, I have a question for you on that subject. Did you really need to go to Seattle this Saturday? Or was that just an excuse to get out of saying a definitive no to your bevy of admirers?
That's what I thought.
You know, you actually put me in kind of a difficult position with the whole thing in the parking lot with Taylor.
You mean because you're taking her to prom now? My mouth fell open, and then I ground my teeth together. She was trying not to laugh now.
Oh, Bo.
I could tell there was more. What?
She already has her dress.
I had no words for that. She must have read the panic in my eyes.
It could be worse. She actually bought it before she claimed you for the date. It was secondhand also, not a large investment.
She couldn't pass up the deal. I still couldn't talk. She squeezed my hand again.
You'll figure it out.
I don't do dances,
I said sadly. If I'd asked you to the spring dance, would you have told me no? I looked at her long gold eyes and tried to imagine refusing her anything she wanted. Probably not, but I would have found a reason to cancel later. I would have broken my leg if I had to. She looked mystified. Why would you do that? I shook my head sadly. You've never seen me in gym, I guess, but I would have thought you would understand. Are you referring to the fact that you can't walk across a flat, stable surface without finding something to trip over? Got it in one. I'm a very good teacher, Bo. I don't think coordination is a learnable skill. She shook her head. Back to the question. Must you go to Seattle, or would you mind if we did something different? As long as the we part was in, I didn't care about anything else. I'm open to alternatives, I allowed. But I do have another favor to ask. She looked wary, like she always did when I asked an open-ended question. What? Can I drive? She frowned. Why? Well, mostly because you're a terrifying driver, but also because I told Charlie I was going alone and I don't want him to get curious. She rolled her eyes. Of all the things about me that could frighten you, you worry about my driving. She shook her head in disgust, but then her eyes were serious again. Won't you want to tell your father that you're spending the day with me? There was an undercurrent to her question that I didn't understand. With Charlie, less is always more. I was definite about that. Where are we going, anyway? Archie says the weather will be nice, so I'll be staying out of the public eye, and you can stay with me if you'd like to. Again, she was leaving the choice up to me. And you'll show me what you meant about the sun? I asked, excited by the idea of solving another of the unknowns. Yes. She smiled, then hesitated. But if you don't want to be alone with me, I'd still rather you didn't go to Seattle by yourself. I shudder to think of all the vans. As it happens, I don't mind being alone with you. I know, she sighed. You should tell Charlie, though. I shook my head at the thought of explaining my personal life to Charlie. Why on earth would I do that? Her eyes were suddenly fierce. To give me some small incentive to bring you back. I waited for her to relax. When she didn't, I said, I'll take my chances. She exhaled angrily and looked away. So that's settled. New topic? My attempt to change the subject didn't help much. What do you want to talk about? She asked through her teeth, still annoyed. I glanced around us, making sure we were well out of anyone's hearing. In the back corner, Archie was leaning forward, talking to Jessamine. Eleanor sat beside her, but Royal was gone. Why did you go to that Goat Rocks place last weekend? To hunt? Charlie said it wasn't a good place to hike, because of bears. She stared at me as if I was missing something very obvious. Bears? I gasped. She smirked. You know, bears are not in season, I added sternly, to cover my shock. If you read carefully, the laws only cover hunting with weapons, she informed me. She watched my face with enjoyment as that slowly sank in. Bears? I repeated with difficulty. Grizzly is Eleanor's favorite. Her voice was still offhand, but her eyes were scrutinizing my reaction. I tried to pull myself together. I said, taking another bite of pizza as an excuse to look down. I chewed slowly, then swallowed. So, I said after a moment, what's your favorite? She raised an eyebrow, and the corners of her mouth turned down like she didn't approve of my question. Mountain lion. Sure, that makes sense. I nodded, like she just said something totally normal. Of course. Her tone mirrored mine. Nothing out of the ordinary. We have to be careful not to impact the environment with injudicious hunting. We try to focus on areas with an overpopulation of predators, ranging as far away as we need. There are always plenty of deer and elk here, and they'll do. But where's the fun in that? She smiled. So not fun, I murmured around another bite of pizza. Early spring is Elle's favorite bear season. They're just coming out of hibernation. So they're more irritable. She smiled at some remembered joke. Nothing better than an irritated grizzly bear, I agreed, nodding. She laughed, then shook her head. Tell me what you're really thinking, please. I'm trying to picture it, but I can't, I admitted. How do you hunt a bear without weapons? Oh, we have weapons. She flashed her bright teeth with a wide grin that wasn't really a smile. Just not the kind they consider when writing hunting laws. If you've ever seen a bear attack on television, you should be able to visualize Eleanor hunting. I glanced across the cafeteria toward Eleanor, grateful that she wasn't looking my way. The long, smooth lines of muscle that ran down her arms and legs were suddenly much more than intimidating. I pictured her gripping under the edge of a mountain, then lifting. Edith followed my gaze and chuckled. I stared back at her, unnerved. Is it dangerous? I asked in a low voice. Do you ever get hurt? Her laughter pealed like a bell. Oh, Bo, about as dangerous as your slice. I looked at the pizza crust and said, Yikes. So, are you like a bear attack? More like the lion, or so they tell me, she said lightly. Perhaps our preferences are indicative. Perhaps, I repeated. I tried to smile, but my mind was struggling to fit the paradoxical images together, and failing. Is that something I might get to see? Never, she whispered. Her face turned even whiter than usual, and her eyes were suddenly horrified. She pulled her hand gently from mine and wrapped her arms tightly around her body. My hand lay there empty on the table, numb from the cold. What did I say? I asked. She closed her eyes for a moment, regaining control. When she met my stare at last, she looked angry. I almost wish it were possible. You don't seem to understand the realities present. It might be beneficial for you to see exactly how dangerous I actually am. Okay, then, why not? I pressed, trying to ignore her hard expression. She glared at me for a long minute. Later, she finally said. She was on her feet in one lithe movement. We're going to be late. I glanced around, startled to see that she was right and the cafeteria was nearly vacant. When I was with her, the time and the place were such minor details that I completely lost track of both. I jumped up, grabbing our bags from the floor. Later then, I agreed. I wouldn't forget. Chapter 11. Complications. Everyone watched us as we walked together to our lab table. This time, she didn't angle the chair to sit as far from me as the desk would allow. Instead, she sat right next to me, our arms almost touching. Her hair brushed my skin. Mrs. Banner backed into the room then, pulling an outdated TV and VCR on a wheeled frame. It seemed like everyone in the room relaxed at the same time. I was relieved, too. I knew I wouldn't have been able to pay attention to a lecture today. I had too much to sort through inside my head already. Mrs. Banner shoved the old tape into the VCR, then walked across the room to turn off the lights. And then suddenly, as the room went black, things got weird. It wasn't like I wasn't already hyper-aware that Edith was right there, just an inch away from me. I wouldn't have imagined that I could be more aware of her. But in the dark, somehow, it was like an electrical current was flowing through her body into mine. Like those miniature lightning bolts that jump between live circuits were dancing up and down the small gap between our bodies. Where her hair touched my arm, it was almost painful. A crazy strong impulse to reach over and touch her, to stroke her perfect face just once in the darkness, almost overwhelmed me. What was wrong with me? You couldn't just go around touching people because the lights were off. I crossed my arms tightly over my ribs and balled my hands into fists. The opening credits started, and the room got a fraction brighter. I couldn't stop myself from peeking over at her. She was sitting exactly like I was, arms crossed, hands clenched, just glancing over to me. When she saw me looking too, she smiled, almost like she was embarrassed. Even in the dark, her eyes still burned. I had to look away before I did something stupid, something that would definitely not conform to her idea of careful. It was a very long hour. I couldn't concentrate on the movie. I didn't have any idea what it was about. I tried to act normal, to make my muscles relax, but the electrical current never let up. Now and then, I let myself take a quick glance in her direction, but she never seemed to relax either. The feeling that I just had to touch her face also refused to go away. I kept my fists crushed safely against my ribs until my fingers were aching with the effort. I sighed with relief when Mrs. Banner flicked the lights back on at the end of class and stretched my arms down at my sides, flexing my stiff fingers. Edith laughed once.
"Well, that was interesting," she murmured.
Her voice was low and her eyes were cautious. Was all I was able to respond.
"Shall we?"
she asked, on her feet in one liquid movement. She scooped her bag up with one finger. I stood carefully, worried I wouldn't be able to walk straight after all that. She walked with me to gym in silence and then paused at the door. I looked down to say goodbye, but choked on the word. Her face, it was torn, almost pained, and so unbearably beautiful that the ache to touch her hit me even more intensely than it had before. It was all I could do to just stare. She raised one hand, hesitant, conflict clear in her eyes, and then quickly brushed her fingertips across the line of my jaw. Her fingers were icy, like always, but the trail they left on my skin was almost like a burn that hadn't turned painful yet. She spun without a word and walked swiftly away from me. I stumbled into the gym, lightheaded and unstable, and dressed down in a trance, barely aware of the other people around me. Reality didn't fully set in until I was handed a racket. It wasn't very heavy, but I knew that didn't matter. In my hands, it was dangerous. I could see a few of the other kids eyeing me and the racket. Then Coach Clapp ordered us to choose our own partners, and I figured I was about to be the last guy up against the wall. But I'd underestimated Michaela's loyalty. She came to stand next to me right away. "You don't have to do this, you know," I told her. She grinned.
"Don't worry, I'll keep out of your way."
Sometimes it was really easy to like Michaela. It didn't go smoothly. I'm not sure how I did it, but I managed to hit myself in the head with my racket and clip Michaela's shoulder on the same swing. I spent the rest of the hour in the back corner of the court, the racket held behind my back. Despite being handicapped by me, Michaela was pretty good. She won 3 games out of 4 single-handedly, then gave me an unearned high five when the coach finally blew the whistle ending class.
"So,"
she started as we walked off the court.
"So. You and Edith Cullen, huh?"
Her tone was just slightly hostile.
"Yeah, me and Edith Cullen," I replied.
I'm sure she could hear the sound of wonder in my voice.
"I don't like it,"
she muttered. Well, you don't actually have to.
So she just snaps her fingers and you heal?
Guess so. She scowled at me. I turned my back on her and walked away. I knew I would be last against the wall tomorrow, but I didn't care. By the time I was dressed, I'd forgotten all about Michaela. Would Edith be outside, or should I go wait by her car? What if her family was there? She'd parked right next to Royal's car. Just thinking about Royal's face in the cafeteria had me wondering if I should walk home. Had she told them that I knew? Was I supposed to know that they knew that I knew? What was the etiquette on vampire acknowledgments? Did a nod work? But when I walked out of the gym, Edith was there. She stood in the shade of the gym building, though the clouds were still black, with her hands laced together in front of her. Her face was peaceful now, a small smile turning up just the corners of her lips. The thin sweater didn't look like enough, and though I knew it was stupid, I wanted to take my jacket off and wrap it around her. As I walked to her side, I felt a strange sense of harmony, like everything was right in the world as long as I was close to her. Hi. I could feel the huge, goofy smile on my face. Hello. Her answering smile was brilliant. How was Jim? I was suddenly suspicious. Fine. Really? Her eyebrows shot up. How's your head? You didn't. She started walking slowly toward the parking lot. I automatically fell into step with her. You were the one who mentioned how I'd never seen you in gym. It made me curious. Great, I said. Fantastic. Well, sorry about that. I don't mind walking home if you don't want to be seen with me. She laughed musically. It was very entertaining. Though I wouldn't have minded if you'd hit that girl just a little harder. What? As she glanced behind us, her mouth flattened into a straight line. I turned to see what she was looking at. Michaela's blonde hair bobbing as she walked away. It's been a while since someone besides family thought those kinds of words about me. I don't think I like it. I felt a sudden pang of anxiety for Michaela. Edith read my expression and laughed again. Don't worry, I wouldn't hurt your friend. If I did, who else would agree to be your badminton partner? It was hard to process. Edith was just so delicate. But when she said this, it was clear that she was more than confident in her abilities. If she wanted Michaela, or anyone, hurt, it would be very bad news for that person. She was dangerous, I knew this. But I kept running into a wall when I tried to believe it. I changed the subject. What kinds of words has your family been thinking about you? She shook her head. It's not fair to judge people on their thoughts. Those are supposed to be private. It's actions that count. I don't know. If you know someone can hear, isn't that the same thing as saying it out loud? Easy for you to say, she grinned. Controlling your thoughts is very difficult. When Royal and I butt heads, I think much worse things about him, and I do say those words out loud. She laughed, her ringing laugh again. I hadn't been watching where we were going, so I was surprised when we had to slow, blocked from Edith's car by a crowd of kids. There was a circle around Royal's red convertible, too deep, mostly guys. Some of them looked about to drool. None of her family was around, and I wondered if she'd asked them to give her some space. None of the car enthusiasts even looked up when I edged by them to get Edith's door. Ostentatious, she muttered as she slid past me. I hurried around to the passenger side and climbed in. What kind of car is that? An M3, she said as she tried to back out of the space without hitting anybody. I don't speak car and driver. She carefully maneuvered her way free. It's a BMW. Okay, I know that one. We pulled away from the school, and it was just the two of us. The privacy felt like freedom. There was no one watching or listening here. Is it later yet? I asked her. She didn't miss the significance in my tone. She frowned. I suppose it is. I kept my expression neutral while I waited for her to explain. She watched the road, pretending like she actually needed to, and I watched her face. A few different expressions flickered across it, but they changed so fast I wasn't able to interpret them. I was starting to wonder if she was just going to ignore my question when she stopped the car. I looked up, surprised. We were at Charlie's house, parked behind my truck. It was easier to ride with her, I decided, when I didn't look until it was over. She was staring at me when I looked back, seeming to measure me with her eyes. "And you want to know why you can't see me hunt?" she asked. Her voice was serious, but her expression was a little amused. Not at all like it had been in the cafeteria earlier. "Yes, and why you seemed so mad when I asked." She raised her eyebrows. "Did I frighten you?" The question sounded hopeful. "Did you want to?" She tilted her head to one side. "Maybe I did." "Okay, then, sure. I was terrified." She smiled, shook her head, and then her face was serious again. "I apologize for reacting like that. It was just the thought of you being near while we hunted." Her jaw tightened. "That would be bad?" She answered through her teeth. "Extremely." "Because..." She took a deep breath and stared through the windshield at the thick, rolling clouds that seemed to press down, almost within reach. "When we hunt," she spoke slowly, unwillingly, "we give ourselves over to our senses, govern less with our minds, especially our sense of smell. If you were anywhere near me when I lost control that way..." She shook her head, still staring unhappily at the heavy clouds. I kept my expression empty, expecting the swift flash of her eyes to judge my reaction that followed. But her eyes held, and the silence deepened, changed. Flickers of the electricity I'd felt this afternoon began to charge the atmosphere as she gazed without blinking into my eyes. It wasn't until my head started to swim that I realized I wasn't breathing. When I drew in a jagged breath, breaking the silence, she closed her eyes. "Bo, I think you should go inside now." Her low voice wasn't so smooth, more like raw silk now, and her eyes were on the clouds again. I opened the door, and the arctic draft that burst into the car helped clear my head. Afraid I was so lightheaded that I might stumble, I stepped carefully out of the car and shut the door behind me without looking back. The whir of the automatic window unrolling made me turn. "Oh, Bo?" she called after me. She leaned toward the open window with a small smile on her lips. "Yeah? Tomorrow it's my turn." "Your turn to what?" She smiled wider, flashing her gleaming teeth. "Ask the questions." And then she was gone, the car speeding down the street and disappearing around the corner before I could even put my thoughts in order. I smiled as I walked to the house. It was clear she was planning to see me tomorrow, if nothing else. That night, Edith starred in my dreams, as usual. However, the climate of my unconsciousness had changed. It thrilled with the same electricity that had charged the afternoon, and I tossed and turned restlessly, waking often. It was only in the early hours of the morning that I finally sank into an exhausted, dreamless sleep. When my alarm went off, I was still beat, but wired at the same time. After I showered, I stared at myself in the bathroom mirror while I combed through my wet hair. I looked the same as always, and yet there was something different. My hair was dark and too thick, my skin too pale, and my bones were all shaped the same underneath. No change there. My eyes were the same light blue staring back at me, but I realized they were the culprits. I'd always thought it was the color that made them, and by extension, the rest of my face looked so uncertain. But though the color hadn't changed, the lack of resolve had. The boy who looked back at me today was determined, sure of his course. I wondered when that had happened. I thought I could probably guess. Breakfast was the usual quiet event I expected. Charlie fried eggs for himself. I had my bowl of cereal. I wondered if he had forgotten about this Saturday. "About this Saturday," he began, like he could read my mind. I was getting really paranoid about that specific concern. "Yes, Dad?" He walked across the kitchen and turned on the faucet. "Are you still set on going to Seattle?" "That was the plan." I frowned, wishing he hadn't brought it up so I wouldn't have to compose careful half-truths. He squeezed some dish soap onto his plate and swirled it around with a brush. "And you're sure you can't make it back in time for the dance?" "I'm not going to the dance, Dad."
"Didn't anyone ask you?"
he asked, his eyes focused on the plate.
"It's not my thing," I reminded him.
"Oh." He frowned as he dried his plate. I wondered if he was worried about me being a social outcast. Maybe I should have told him I had lots of invitations. But that would obviously backfire. He wouldn't be very happy if he knew I'd turned them all down. Then I would have to tell him that there was a girl who hadn't asked me, and obviously I didn't want to get into that. Which got me thinking about prom and Taylor and the dress she already had and Logan's attitude toward me and that whole mess. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do. In any universe, I wasn't going to prom. In a universe where Edith Cullen existed, I wasn't going to be interested in any other girl. It wasn't fair to just go along with Taylor's plan when my heart wasn't in it. The problem was figuring out how. Charlie left then, with a goodbye wave, and I went upstairs to brush my teeth and gather my books. When I heard the cruiser pull away, I could only wait a few seconds before I had to look out of my window. The silver car was already there, waiting in Charlie's spot on the driveway. I took the stairs three at a time and was out the door in seconds. I wondered how long this strange routine would continue. I never wanted it to end. She waited in the car, not appearing to watch as I shut the door behind me without bothering to lock the deadbolt. I walked to the car, then hesitated for just a second before I opened the door and climbed in. She was smiling, relaxed, and as usual, so perfect it was painful. "Good morning. How are you today?" Her eyes roamed over my face, like the question was something more than simple courtesy. "Good, thank you." I was always good, much more than good, when I was close to her. Her gaze lingered on the circles under my eyes. "You look tired." "I couldn't sleep," I admitted. She laughed. "Neither could I." The engine purred quietly to life. I was getting used to the sound. The roar of my truck would probably scare me the next time I drove it. "I guess that's right," I said. "I probably did get more sleep than you."
"I would wager you did."
"So what did you do last night?" She laughed.
"Not a chance. It's my day to ask questions."
"Oh, that's right." My forehead creased. I couldn't imagine anything about me that would be interesting to her. "What do you want to know?"
"What's your favorite color?"
she asked, totally serious. I shrugged. "It changes."
"What is it today?"
Probably gold, I guess.
"Is there anything material behind your choice, or is it random?"
I cleared my throat self-consciously.
"It's the color of your eyes today," If you asked me in a week, I'd probably say black. She gave me a look that I didn't entirely understand, but before I could ask, she was on to her next question. What music is in your CD player right now? I had to think about that one for a second, until I remember that the last thing I'd listened to was the CD Phil had given me. When I said the name of the band, she smiled and opened a hatch under the car's CD player. She pulled out one of the dozens of CDs that were packed into the small space and handed it to me. It was the same CD.
Debussy to this? She asked, raising an eyebrow.
It continued like that for the rest of the day. While we walked between classes and all through the lunch hour, she questioned me without a break. She wanted to know about every insignificant detail of my existence. Movies I'd liked and hated, the few places I'd been and the many places I wanted to go, and books. So many questions about books. I couldn't remember the last time I'd talked so much. I felt self-conscious the whole time, knowing I had to be boring her. But she always seemed on the edge of her seat, waiting for my answers. She always had a follow-up question. She always wanted more. So I went along with the psychoanalysis, since it seemed to matter to her. When the first bell rang, I sighed deeply. It was time. There's one question you haven't asked me yet. More than one, actually, but which specific one are you looking for? The most embarrassing thing I've ever done? She grinned. Is it a spectacular story? I'm not sure yet. I'll tell you in 5 minutes. I shoved away from the table. Her eyes were bright with curiosity. At my usual table, my friends were all just getting to their feet. I walked toward them. Patches of red flared in my cheeks, but that was probably okay. I was supposed to look emotional. Anyway, the pretty guy in the melodramatic soap my mom used to watch religiously looked fired up when he did this scene. Thanks to him, at least I had a general outline for my script, embellished by something I'd once thought about Edith. I wanted to keep this flattering. Jeremy noticed me first, and his eyes were speculative. They flashed from my red face to where Edith was and back to me. Taylor, can I have a minute? I said as I walked up to her. I didn't say it quietly. She was right in the very middle of the cluster. Logan turned to glower at me with his fishy green eyes.
Sure, Beau, Taylor said, looking confused.
Look, I said. I can't do this anymore. Everyone fell silent. Jeremy's eyes got all round. Alan looked embarrassed. Michaela shot me a critical glance, like she couldn't believe I was doing it this way. But she didn't know exactly what I was doing, or why I needed this audience. Taylor was shocked.
What?
I scowled. It was easy. I was pretty angry right now that I hadn't talked myself out of this, or come up with a better way. But it was too late for improv now.
I'm tired of being a pawn in your game, Taylor. Do you even realize that I have feelings of my own? And all I can do is watch while you use me to make someone else jealous.
My eyes darted quickly to Logan, whose mouth was hanging open, and back to Taylor.
You don't care if you break my heart in the process. Is it being beautiful that's made you so cruel?
Taylor's eyes were wide, her mouth open in a little O.
I'm not going to play anymore. This whole prom charade, I'm out. Go with the person you really want to be with.
A longer glare this time at Logan. And then I stalked away, slamming through the cafeteria doors in what I hoped was a dramatic way. I was never going to live this down. But at least I was free. Probably worth it. Suddenly Edith was right next to me, keeping pace like we'd been walking together all along.
That truly was spectacular, she said.
I took a deep breath. Maybe a little over the top. Did it work?
Like a charm.
Taylor's feeling quite the femme fatale,
and she's not even sure why. If Logan doesn't ask her to prom by Monday, I'll be surprised.
Good, I grunted.
And now back to you.
Edith kept up the quiz until we were in biology and Mrs. Banner arrived, dragging the audiovisual frame again. When she was finished with her prep and turned toward the light switch, I saw Edith slide her chair a half inch farther away from mine. It didn't help. As soon as the room was dark, there was that same electric tension, the same restless craving to stretch my hand across the short space and touch her cold, smooth skin. It was like an itch that just got more and more demanding. I couldn't pay attention to anything else. Hopefully, whatever movie it was that we were watching wouldn't be on the final. After a little while, maybe 15 minutes, or maybe it was only two and it just felt so long because of the electricity, I shifted my chair over and slowly leaned to the side until my arm was just touching her shoulder. She didn't move away. I thought that little contact would help, that it would take away the nagging want, but it kind of backfired. The little frisson of electricity got stronger, changed into bigger jolts. I was suddenly dying to put my arm around her, to pull her into my side and hold her against me. I wanted to run my fingers down the length of her hair, to bury my face in it. I wanted to trace the shape of her lips, the line of her cheekbone, the length of her throat. Not really appropriate for a classroom full of people. I leaned forward, folding my arms on the table and gripping under the edge with my fingers, trying to hold myself in place. I didn't look at her, afraid that if she was looking back at me, it would only make self-control that much harder. I tried to make myself watch the movie, but the patches of color just wouldn't resolve into coherent images. I sighed in relief again when Mrs. Banner hit the lights, and then finally I looked at Edith. She was staring back, her eyes ambivalent. Like yesterday, we walked toward the gym in silence. And also like yesterday, she touched my face wordlessly, this time with the back of her cool hand, stroking once from my temple to my jaw, before she turned and walked away. Gym passed quickly. To save time, Coach Clapp told us to keep the same partners, so Michaela was forced to be my teammate again. I watched her one-woman badminton show without participating, for both our safety. She didn't talk to me, but whether that was because of the scene in the cafeteria or our falling out yesterday, or because my expression was so vacant, I didn't know. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I felt bad about that. But I couldn't concentrate on her any more than I could make sense of the movie in biology. I felt the same sense of harmony when I walked out the gym door and saw Edith in the shadow of the gym. Everything was right in my world. A wide smile spread automatically across my face. She smiled back, then launched into more cross-examination. Her questions were different now, not as easily answered. She wanted to know what I missed about my home, insisting on descriptions of anything she wasn't familiar with. We sat in front of Charlie's house for hours as the sky darkened and rain plummeted around us in a sudden cloudburst. I tried to describe impossible things like the scent of creosote, bitter, kind of resinous, but still pleasant, the high, keening sound of the cicadas in July, the gaunt, feathery trees, the enormous sky extending white-blue from horizon to horizon. The hardest thing to explain was why it was so beautiful to me, to justify a beauty that didn't depend on the spiny vegetation that mostly looked half-dead, a beauty that had something to do with the exposed shape of the land, with the shallow bowls of valleys between the craggy hills, and the way they held on to the sun. I found myself using my hands as I tried to describe it to her. Her quiet, probing questions kept me talking freely, forgetting to be embarrassed for monopolizing the conversation. Finally, when I had finished detailing my old room at home, she paused instead of responding with another question. "Are you finished?" I asked in relief. "Not even close, but your father will be home soon." "How late is it?
I wondered out loud as I glanced at the clock. I was surprised by the time.
It's twilight, Edith murmured, looking toward the western horizon, hidden behind the clouds. Her voice was thoughtful, as if her mind were far away.
I stared at her as she stared out the windshield. I was still staring when her eyes suddenly shifted back to mine.
It's the safest time of day for us, she said, answering the unspoken question in my eyes. The easiest time. But also the saddest, in a way.
The end of another day, the return of the night.
Darkness is so predictable, don't you think?
She smiled wistfully. I like the night. Without the dark, you'd never see the stars. I frowned. Not that you see them here much. She laughed, and the mood abruptly lightened.
Charlie will be here in a few minutes, so unless you want to tell him that you'll be with me Saturday.
She looked at me hopefully. Thanks, but no thanks. I gathered my books, stiff from sitting still so long. So is it my turn tomorrow then?
Certainly not, she pretended to be outraged. I told you I wasn't done, didn't I?
What more is there? She displayed the dimples.
You'll find out tomorrow.
I stared at her, a little dazed, as usual. I'd always thought I didn't really have a type. My former crowd back home all had something. One liked blondes, and one only cared about the legs, and one had to have blue eyes. I'd thought I was less particular. A pretty girl was a pretty girl. But I realized now that I must have been the most difficult to please of them all. Apparently, my type was extremely specific. I'd just never known it. I hadn't known my favorite hair color was this metallic shade of bronze, because I'd never seen it before. I hadn't known I was looking for eyes the color of honey, because I'd never seen those either. I didn't know a girl's lips had to be curved just this way, and her cheekbones high under the long slash of her black lashes. All along, there had only been one shape, one face that would move me. Like an idiot, warnings forgotten, I reached for her face, leaning in. She recoiled. I started to say as my hand dropped. But her head whipped forward, and she was staring into the rain again.
Oh no,
she breathed.
What's wrong?
Her jaw was clenched, her brows pulled down into a hard line over her eyes. She glanced at me for one brief second.
Another complication, she told me glumly.
She leaned across me and flung my door open in one quick movement. Her proximity sent my heart racing in an uneven gallop. And then she almost cringed away from me. Headlights flashed through the rain. I looked up, expecting Charlie and a bunch of explanations to follow. But it was a dark sedan I didn't recognize.
Hurry, she urged.
She was glaring through the downpour at the other vehicle. I jumped out immediately, though I didn't understand. The rain lashed against my face. I pulled my hood up. I tried to make out the shapes in the front seat of the other car, but it was too dark. I could see Edith illuminated in the blaze of the new car's headlights. She was still staring ahead, her gaze locked on something or someone I couldn't see. Her expression was a strange mix of frustration and defiance. Then she revved the engine, and the tires squealed against the wet pavement. The Volvo was out of sight in seconds.
Hey, Bo!
Called a familiar, husky voice from the driver's side of the little black car.
Jules?
I asked, squinting through the rain. Just then, Charlie's cruiser swung around the corner, his lights shining on the occupants of the car in front of me. Jules was already climbing out, her wide grin visible even through the darkness. In the passenger seat was a much older woman, an imposing woman with an unusual face. It was stern and stoic, with creases that ran through the russet skin like an old leather jacket. And the surprisingly familiar eyes, set deep under the heavy brows, black eyes that seemed at the same time both too young and too ancient to match the face. Jules's mother, Bonnie Black. I knew her immediately, though in the more than 5 years since I'd seen her last, I'd managed to forget her name when Charlie had spoken of her my first day here. She was staring at me, scrutinizing my face, so I smiled tentatively at her. Then I processed more, that her eyes were wide, as if in shock or fear, her nostrils flared. And my smile faded.